China de personas que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur, Denijir Jilamujian, para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a un atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
They told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
To This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle.
So, coming up next on the archives and probably on the stream here too is the Free Radio Santa Cruz Bathrobes Piers broadside show for July 27th, 2023. I was going to give you more original material, but it appears our transmitter, or our web, which deals with our, not our transmitter, but our website handler, who operates out of Texas, is experiencing problems. So it's going in and out. So what I'm doing is I'm going to give you instead something I'm able to download directly from my own computer, which is two segments of a show, well, two shows, actually. The only remaining segments of those shows that I've yet been able to find. One from April 27th, 2000. One from April 30th, 2000. Back-to-back shows, in essence. Before I do, sort of as a teaser, I'm going to play a bit of a conversation, a snatch of a conversation I had with Cooper D'Angelo, who reported to me several times in the last few days by phone of police sweeps, abuse, seizure of property, violation of basic human civil rights under the Martin versus Boise decision of a campsite, series of campers. She estimated there were numbers were about 30 up around the at the end of Golf Club Drive. The kind of remains of the refugees who fled from the Highway 9 arrests. Well, I should say deportations and demolitions of campsites. We're going to start with that. We'll do a little bit of that, and then we're going to go directly into these flashback segments, which are, I think they're beginning of the two shows, the April 27th and the April 30th, 2000 shows from 23 years ago. And I'll say a little bit more about that at the end of this very brief preview, where you'll be hearing more of it on Sunday, assuming we get our website up again and working. But let's see what we can do now. Today is the 25th of July. I think we're 25th. And I'm talking with Cooper D'Angelo, and it's about 9 o'clock in the morning. I just gave you a call, Cooper, to see what has been happening, because you predicted yesterday that, well, you predicted nothing would happen, but you also were wondering what would happen, and I was wondering, too, because police threatened to return any community of 30 people that are living up at the end of, what is it, Golf Club Road or whatever it's called?
Right. It's in the, up in the Poconos, so it's past, yeah.
Yeah. So so you say you instead the police came and delivered two porta potties, but of unknown purpose, huh?
Right. What I saw this morning, a lot of people have packed their things and stashed them in the bushes to avoid being robbed by police.
Mm-hmm.
So that at the same time, I noticed a truck coming up the road, pulling two porta potties on the flatbed, and they dropped it off a little up the road from us. At the entrance of the other camp area, and then one of the police up, and I guess he parked over by the porta potty but didn't talk to anybody, and then he left, and then now a police on a four-wheel motorcycle quad came up. So we're not sure if the porta potties were delivered for us
or against you. Yeah.
Right, because or if it's workmen that they're doing it for. So we're just hanging tight. We haven't packed anything because this is the best place that we can be right now, and the rest of the people too.
So I don't like to be anticlimactic and spoil the suspense, but it was unfortunately porta potties, so they don't mind providing them, the city, for workmen destroying encampments without providing alternative housing for them. Apparently they did refuse to provide porta potties for people who were living there for a couple of months after the demolition of the Highway 9 encampment. And, of course, the Highway 9 encampment never got porta-potties. Or actually, it had them like, I don't know, a year and a half ago during the COVID scene. But they were taken away very soon after. And the porta-potties that had been at the Benchlands area, I think there were 10 or 11 of them, 8 or 9 of them, something like that, along the path of the upper San Lorenzo Park area, sort of somewhat near the duck pond, were removed, of course, when the Benchlands people were removed and their property destroyed, and they were never replaced. I guess finally they did open the long closed bathroom 6 months later, I might add, which was, it was never explained to me by, I'm not quite sure when it was reopened, but it certainly wasn't reopened when it was needed for people who were living in the Benchlands. And the Benchlands porta-potties were never replaced in the campgrounds that formed from the refugees from the Benchlands. And likewise, in the Highway 9 areas, when that was dispersed, similarly, there were not porta-potties set up for people who went to other areas. Obviously, the city's interest in public health and safety, if it exists at all for poor people outside, is extremely secondary to aesthetics, to maintaining a hostile demeanor toward homeless people so they don't try to get together in encampments, campgrounds, seek legal support for their basic civil rights. And so the city could continue to pretend everything is okie-dokie and return to the status quo ante, as they call it, the status quo before. The bad situation that went on in the past. It's like sort of rewinding the clock the way the Roe versus Wade decision has been overturned by the Supreme Court, turning us back to the bad 50s for women in many states in need of abortions. Anyway, you'll be hearing more from Cooper. I'll be playing more, although I'm not sure how much more, on Sunday, when we, assuming that we can get some actual effective communication with the website, which I can't guarantee. But what you're about to hear now are, again, two segments from 2000, April, late April, the 27th and the 30th. You'll hear activist James Ney, who was a strong supporter of ending the sleeping ban, did a lot of tabling on the sidewalk between the Del Mar and New Leaf on Pacific Avenue, was harassed by the hosts, who are, I guess, the group that has replaced them is not as harassing as the old hosts. In fact, I haven't heard a lot. I wanted to say a lot of bad reports. I don't know that I've heard any bad reports yet. But again, I have not heard any bad reports from the so-called ambassadors or hosts, the people who are supposed to give direction to tourists. And they were actually billed as helpers to mediate downtown situations, when in fact, when they were introduced in 1995, and the old bad hosts, if you want to describe them that way, were they were really the eyes and ears of the police. They were kind of snitches, and they were sort of cheap police labor. That they couldn't give out tickets, but they could frighten people away, because often that's the main action that the police does, the police do in Santa Cruz, and do it is frighten people away. They don't want to go through the rigmarole and possibly face legal consequences and constitutional violations for actually violating people's rights and such a basic issue of the right to sleep or the right to rest. But if they can scare them away for the threat of their losing their property, and the claim that, oh, we didn't do that because we offered them a place to go, they're really just service resistant, then that's been happening. That is what they have been doing. Anyway, this April 27th, 2000 flashback has lots of interviews from car dwellers, folks who are ground sleepers. Becky Johnson, our beggarbacker Becky, as I used to call her, was a co-host and a co-producer of the show at that time, and she was in the studio talking about some of the issues. There was a lot of active agitation by people like dead-on David Silva, who was pushing for ending the sleeping ban in a reasonable fashion, giving people legal places to sleep without alarming the horses or freaking out the merchants or terrorizing the West Side businesses, West Side residents as well. Then we have Julie Constanza Gomez, the whole issue of the Dolphin Lee project, which became the Nueva Vista housing project, which involved the demolition of a lot of low-income Hispanic housing. Housing is largely involved Latino folks. And that was pushed by former Mayor Catherine Byers, the new mayor at this time of this netcast or broadcast, actually. We were broadcasting on the air then. Was Keith Sugar, who has since died. Anyway, you're going to hear lots of discussion of the city council's machinations and the activists trying to get the city council to face the issue of the right to sleep. The second flashback is from the show that happened 3 days later on the April 30th. David Silva talks about his campaign to end the sleeping ban. James Ney about his sleeping ban table and chalking on the sidewalk for which he was arrested. There used to be a thing called Alibaba's Cafe, which is now Cafe Campesino. If you know the little green, one of the green kiosks that sort of faces the information kiosk in front of New Leaf. He was a somewhat rough-spoken fellow who was on good terms with the police. And the two of those business owners, along with New Leaf, colluded to set up this chained area that you now see downtown in 2023. It used to be a social gathering place, but some of these businesses didn't like the youth that gathered there, and so they turned it into a leased private space on the sidewalk, ripping it away from the public. But you'll hear this flashback is from a time when it was still actually public space, and people were using it in a public manner. You'll hear Mike Schmidt, who is a Chamber of Commerce conservative in some ways, who became a very strong advocate for ending the sleeping ban. These were the days when a lot of people came together, and even the city council of that time was elected on the promise to do something about it, and when they did, they turned tail and ran. I'll have to say that the city council that was elected in 2018, which was council members Glover, Crone, and Cummings, the only one of them turned tail, and that was, of course, Cummings, but that's all it took to defeat the attempt to reform the criminalization of the homeless, which is now going full force, as you can hear from these sweeps. So listen in. Enjoy it if you can. Learn from it if you can. Try to find ways we can stop the city's authorities from doing the same thing again. And if you have thoughts, comments, criticism, or you want to be involved in ending this kind of activity, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. That's 423-4833. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And we're a ragtag band of activists who do a lot of talking, get together and bemoan the situation, and wonder if someday we'll take actions to change it.
soup. That was my crime. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. I have a shop on the street in town where hungry folks walk up and down. Some have no home, some sick from want. So I went, got some food from a restaurant. I took it to a central spot to feed the weary, something hot. The police came, took me away. Now for my awful deed, I've gotta pay with 30 days in county jail. Hold my call, hold my mail. Serving soup, that was my crime. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. They said I needed a permit to serve free food. It must be fit. So here I am, awaiting trial, while the hungry have to eat from the garbage pile. 30 days in the county jail. Hold my calls, hold my mail. Serving soup, that was my crime. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. I faced the judge and I made my plea. He looked away when he sentenced me. He said, we won't put you in that hole if you promise not to feed another living soul. I told that judge I could not say that crazy law I would obey, nor pay no fine or post no bail. Now I'm feeding folks inside the county jail. 30 days in the county jail. Hold my calls, hold my mail. Serving soup, that was my crime. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. Now Ollie North, he lied under oath, lied to the judge and the Congress both. He was running drugs for the Contra War, but they locked me up because I fed the poor. Our leader George, you know he might be right when he sees 1,000 points of light with a kindler, gentler hearts like mine. But now there's just 999. 30 days in the county jail. Hold my calls, hold my mail. Serving soup, that was my crime. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. 30 days in the county jail. Hold my call, hold my mail. Serving soup, that was my crime, that was my crime. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. Now instead of serving soup, I'm serving time. Well, serving time.
It's about 15 to 4 here on April 13th in front of the overhang of the Del Mar, where I think a day sometime sunny, sometime cloudy, maybe rainy. Who knows? And we're talking to James Ney, whose papers are blowing away. Hey, James, what's up?
Hello, Robert. How are you today?
I'm good. What's cooking?
I'm set up, as you know, here today underneath the overhang, but still out on the public sidewalk.
Yes.
Okay. Already had two officers here today and three downtown association people.
Hosts?
The hosts.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yes.
The hosts. Who certainly were not hosting me at all. Okay. First they came in, they wandered around, they stared at me, they looked at this, they looked at that. The officers did.
Right. Who were they?
I don't know. Two new young guys that I don't know.
Oh, I think I recall them. Here they come again, I think, yes.
Yeah, both those officers right there.
Okay.
Okay. Then they went in and they got a host, and two of the hosts came out, and they unlocked the door of the theater, and they went in, and they... Because I heard them talking, and they said, well, before you can do anything, I have to tape the sign up.
Right.
The young lady host told the officer. So they went inside, and they moved that no trespassing sign up into the window and taped it there.
Right.
Then the officers left, and after the officers left, the downtown host was kindly enough to come over to tell me that tomorrow I better not set up my table here.
Right here?
Yes.
Okay.
Because this is property of theirs, and that... I cannot set up on the sidewalk.
Theirs being the Del Mar?
The Del Mar, although she was speaking... The Del Mar didn't put that sign up. The downtown host did.
Well, this is the sidewalk.
You know?
This is public property.
Yes. So they told me that I would be arrested for setting up my table here.
Interesting.
Downtown host did.
Another exciting confrontation brewing.
Then the gentleman host that's in there comes out and tells me that I can't
talk. Here comes a man with a ticket book.
Cool.
Did the downtown host talk to you?
Certainly did.
Okay, what he's doing is signing a citation. I'm just
okay.
Issuing it, okay? You got an ID card, please?
So we have two police officers here, and we have a community service officer, 445, and police officers are, let's see, who we got? We got
hey, Robert, how are you?
What's your name again?
John Bush.
I'm sorry, John. John
nice
Bush.
To see you.
Good to see you. And your name, sir?
Aaron Tripp.
And Officer Tripp. Go ahead, James. You were saying?
And now it leads to this, as you can see.
I guess
the downtown host is signing a citizen's complaint against me for chalking on the sidewalk?
I don't know. I think something about defacing the sidewalk with erasable colored children's chalk.
Right, writing political slogans in easily washable chalk on a public sidewalk.
Okay, well, it's very interesting. Perhaps we should announce this to the assembled populace here. Okay.
Tickets for chalking on the sidewalk happening in Santa Cruz. Check it out. Police officers spending your money giving tickets to a homeless activist. Man who advocates the right to sleep at night for poor people is getting ticketed for chalking on the sidewalk.
Say spirits for a dollar, ma'am. Help the homeless. All proceeds go to the homeless.
Not my direct address. 115 Coral
Street. And... officer is writing out a ticket for community service officer.
I was sitting here not thinking about
this to tell you right away.
Daughter stole things and I'll
stole
the car.
I'm looking for a girl guy's friend that starts in that one above, you know? The wheelchair-like device he gets around in?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. He was out here just a little while ago.
Really?
Yeah.
He was driving around like...
In his wheelchair, yes, he was.
And what you heard was a third ticket being given to James Ney. It was either a third ticket for chalking on the sidewalk. He's already been taken to jail on the second ticket for chalking on the sidewalk. He missed a day of work on Monday when he went into a court hearing, supposedly an arraignment on his ticket for chalking on the sidewalk, for which he was handcuffed and taken to jail a couple weeks ago. He faithfully made his court date, only to find that there was no charge that had been leveled, no appearance on the court calendar, and apparently no action at all happening other than, of course, interfering with his livelihood. And a situation where he is fundamentally being run around the Byzantine loops, simply at the whim of the city attorney's office and the police force, or possibly the merchants. It's difficult to tell where exactly the main motivation for harassing him comes from. James Ney is an activist who has been fighting the sleeping ban by signing people up for the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative, for volunteer work for future protests downtown, for demonstrations at City Council. You may have seen him at a table in front of the Del Mar Theater, and you heard him note that he has now been told that if they put a table under the overhang of the Del Mar, we're not talking about even in the Del Mar alcove, we're talking about on that public sidewalk area that runs in front of the Del Mar, because the Del Mar overhang marquee runs above that sidewalk, the new claim of the city attorney and the city police is that somehow that's private property, and that individuals who use that, even in front of a deserted, empty, unused theater, are violating the law. This is a clear attack on political petitioners in public spaces, mostly, I would imagine, at the behest of local businesses that don't like the cause that's being promoted here, which is, of course, the rights of homeless people and the fact that homeless people do tend to come to the table. They do sell Street Spirit newspaper. They do eat the food that occasionally appears at the table. Indeed, we've fed some more people today, and we're going to talk about that. We played that song about 30 days in the county jail. You don't get arrested for serving free food. The police just attempt to use other laws to harass you, to essentially make these kinds of protests more difficult and more infrequent. So that's what you were hearing. You were hearing James Ney out there getting these citations, again, for chalking on the sidewalk in erasable chalk slogans like End the Sleeping Ban, which essentially are very educational to people who have a busy day, don't have time to read flyers, perhaps are reluctant to talk to strangers on the street, but they can, in fact, read something that's written on the sidewalk, and they do. And if it's done in a tasteful and colorful manner, I see no problem with it. In fact, it's a free speech right, even if it's done in a sloppy and obscene manner, or as to say, less appropriate manner. Nonetheless, we're in a society where we're all adults here, and we have certain adult rights, which I think have to be respected. And, of course, that doesn't seem to be the case. And when Ney went to court, in spite of all this rigmarole, all this harassment, the ticket hadn't been filed, even though City Attorney John Barisoni continued to insist to me 2 weeks ago that the city was going to continue to give tickets for chalking behavior if citizen complaints were filed. Now, who's filing these citizen complaints? A group called the Hosts, funded with city money and run by the Downtown Association. Not quite your private citizen making a complaint, but rather another agency of the city. So the whole thing has a suspicious odor to it. It smells like John Barisoni is running in one direction to avoid legal liability or political liability, and the police are running in another direction to keep up the pressure, but to avoid, again, the responsibility. And it's something I think that it'll be interesting to watch in the weeks ahead, because in other cities, chalking the sidewalk has been found to be completely legal. And when people have gone after them, and when authorities have gone after individuals for doing that, there have been significant civil settlements provided, ranging from $2,000 or $3,000 up to $20,000. And in fact, if I could ever find this interview that I've been looking for and continue to look for, I'll give you an attorney's opinion from Berkeley on that. And you'll get an interesting perspective on the history, a successful history of chalking incidents and the settlements that came from them. Tuesday, April 25th, was another day of protest. This was in a somewhat more subdued key. You may recall on March 28th, there were massive protests at City Hall. Many people laid down their sleeping bags. On April 11th, we had the pie presentation to the most pie-worthy councilperson. And all that was quite boisterous and well attended. Well, there was a somewhat more intimate group on April 25th, and the protest began at the Board of Supervisors when I approached the mic myself and simply spoke to the Board of Supervisors on the issue of the sleeping ban, because it's not only the city that has, in essence, a sleeping ban. The county also has its own form of police harassment of poor people trying to sleep in their vehicles. They don't have a law of the same draconian, severe sort that the city has, but they do have a law that makes it, under the new interpretation by the county council and by Judge R. Danner, illegal to sleep in a vehicle on a roadway at night, even for emergency purposes, in most parts of the county. And that, of course, is outrageous and probably unconstitutional if we could ever find the appropriate lawyer and some kind of judges on these courts worth their salt. But that, of course, is always problematic. Let's hear yours truly talking to the Board of Supervisors on this issue.
Supervisors, my name is Robert North. I live at 309 Cedar in in Santa Cruz. My company is engaged again to bring up the issue and raise again the concern I expressed 2 weeks ago when I talked about the situation of homeless people who sleep outside in the city and county. 2 weeks ago, indeed, I called to pass Supervisor Wormhout for failing to actively support a proposal by Area Chamber of Commerce Executive Officer Michael Schmidt for a safe sleeping zone for folks in vehicles in the county parking lot, a responsibility that will be shared with the city at such a space as the armory shelter, and indeed initially the police chief himself was approached to allow that. That seemed to run afoul of his concerns. But county parking lot is vacant at night, and indeed if folks park there in vehicles, they can be gone by dawn. It is an emergency situation for a lot of homeless folks. This would be a gone by dawn safe zone, particularly important within Santa Cruz city limits for several reasons. Beatings and indeed stabbings of the homeless are on the rise. You can read this, you can see it's actually in the Sentinel. Chief Belcher himself documented in December that homeless people are 4 to 13 times more likely to be attacked than those with housing. 51 of 450 assaults last year indeed were against homeless people. Three homeless men, in fact, were airlifted to Stanford Medical Center in the last 3 weeks in emergency condition. The city's Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, when it looked at reports last year of violence against the homeless, condemned the city's law against all sleeping outside or in vehicles between 11 and 8:30 a.m. And in February of 1999, when I brought that to Supervisor Wormhout's Winter Shelter Advisory Committee, which seemed unfortunate to have neither advice nor shelter for homeless people at that time, he wouldn't even allow a discussion of it, and I'm hoping that this position has changed this year. In the city, 700 to 1,500 homeless people are out of doors in an illegal status each night simply for being homeless, for trying to sleep. In the county, that number is 3,000 to 6,000, I would estimate. What is an effect we have is a sheriff's policy of criminalizing homeless people who fall asleep on any county property, including, as any public county property, a legally parked vehicle on a county roadway, about which no one has complained. The city's homeless issues task force has ended 6 months of investigation, research, testimony, and deliberation to present recommendations to the city, which are currently being ignored by the city council. One of these is the obvious, the suspension of the sleeping and camping bans in the city until safe zones are established for vulnerable people to sleep. As I said before, the shelter emergency for homeless people is a pressing one. Escalating rents. Okay, I urge you when this issue comes up before you in May to look it over and to actually invite the Homeless Issues Task Force to come down and talk about it with you and to take action before then if you can. So we're out here at the Homeless Services Center. It's April 25th, about 15 to 11 in the morning. And a report from Karen Brock that a woman complained that police were harassing her for sleeping in her vehicle. She's doing community service on a ticket already, and she's been told that she'll be taken to jail if she continues to sleep in her vehicle, which actually is inaccurate. It's a repeated infraction and not a misdemeanor. I don't think it's the basis for being jailed. Although, good question. We're talking to
Julio Sanchez.
And Julio, you've been in the Green Berets.
Yes.
And when was that?
Well, I'm still in. I went in 66. I haven't gotten out yet.
Okay, so they still got you. But
for the rest of my life.
But you have some comments on how homeless people are treated in Santa Cruz?
Not that good.
How long have you been here?
About 2 months.
And what have you noticed?
It seems like the city council doesn't care about the people of the city of Santa Cruz. Gives a damn about the people here, the homeless. Or they don't try to help or anything for them. There's no subsidized housing, no nothing.
What about, like, where do you sleep at night?
Well, I've been staying at the missions, you know, and I stayed in motels for a while, but it's, you know, it's pretty expensive.
You're a working man?
No, I'm disabled.
Disabled. And how is, you know a lot of people around here. You know that you've been here at the Homeless Services Center back and forth. Do most people here have a legal place to sleep at night?
Nope.
So what do they do?
Just trying to find a place to sleep over the night, you know. There's really no place to go to. There's no facilities that are really available now, and they're cutting them all off because of summertime. So
ISSB is cutting back, is what I've heard.
Anything you want to conclude with about Julio, about the situation here?
Well, I think somebody has to take some kind of action in the city of Santa Cruz, you know, to help the homeless here. Because I never see such population, especially females with kids, or there's a lot of fathers over here with, you know, with the kids that are homeless. And the city hasn't provided anything, nothing at all. And it's about time, to, you know, somebody take some type of action, you know, to help the homeless out.
Would you support a tent city at City Hall?
Yes, I would.
Thank you very much, Julio.
You're welcome.
You're a man who's hunting this car for a couple of years?
Yep.
And what? Any hassles during that time?
I got hassled once when off of Pelton. Pelton's not the right place to stay, as I figured out.
So generally you were pretty successful.
I never got caught in once in 2 years. No. Because I didn't, that time when they hassled me then, I didn't budge because I had a car in the, I had a dog in the car, and so he made all the noise to cover up my movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I had everything blocked out, all the windows. And but then after the police tried to get me out of there, but I didn't respond, then about 20 minutes later, after I was asleep again, this guy came back with one of those marine foghorn things.
Oh, no.
And blew it into the car. Scared the shit out of me. But
this is Santa Cruz Police Force or deputies? Or?
No. They were...
Sure. Before you do that, are you a registered voter?
Yep.
Cool. You have to be in the city. County is the county. Okay, good.
My experience with the police has been that they're pretty good, actually, about the law, that they enforce it only when called. And in 2 years I was there. I mean, like, I was... Other than that one time or one or two times of staying on Pelton, otherwise I was really savvy about where I did it and never got caught at all.
Sounds good. Thank you. Okay. What's your name?
First off, my name is David Darnell.
David, you're homeless?
Yes, I am.
You're doing signatures now.
Yes.
Yeah.
My street name is Whatever. That's what everybody knows.
Hey, Whatever.
Me and two of my friends used to sleep underneath the Soquel Bridge on the other side, how they have the cage there. We slept up inside there. We kept it nice and clean. We would, you know, keep garbage in bags. We would take them out to the dumpster. We had the place cleaned up. It was nasty when we got in there. We were keeping it clean. But cops kept kicking us out. We'd go back, you know, like...
Kick at you or just kick you out?
They'd kick us out first. They were just kicking us out.
Right.
But, you know, we don't have another place to go when it starts raining out here, you know. And they won't even let you stay underneath here at the Del Mar. So what do you do? You go underneath the bridge. You know, so we made our little home underneath the bridge, you know. They kept kicking us out at first. So then we had to start playing it smart. We kept telling people, all right, don't go mobbing up. Don't go in large groups. Because the businesses around that bridge were calling the cops on us because they didn't want homeless people living underneath the bridge next to their business. You know, so, you know, after a while, and then the cops, it just started getting worse. The cops would start showing up more often. And then just last week, they busted a bunch of kids down there.
And what did they do? What kind of...
Well, I wasn't there for the actual bust, but they caught them with some drugs. So they gave them just more things to add on to it. So, and I haven't seen the kids. I don't know if they got tickets for camping or what, but now they had the thing all chained up and locked up so nobody can get in there. So you can't sleep underneath the bridge no more. So then we moved from off the side of the bridge to the bushes that are next to the Soquel Bridge. We're just sleeping out there.
Which, of course, it's illegal to even be there after dark, you bad boy, you.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and so then they came down there and told us we can't be there. And so we're playing this ongoing game of trying to find a place to sleep every single night. You know, and I mean, it's just like they got on their butts one day. Like, one of the cops was saying, he was like, why don't you get a job? And I was like, well, you know, it would be a little easier for me to get a job if I didn't spend all day trying to figure out where I was going to sleep at night. You know, I mean.
And what did that fine officer respond to your argument?
Nothing. He just told me he doesn't want to catch me, you know, sleeping anywhere at night, because this one officer, you know, they all know me now, and any of them, they're done giving me warnings. So if they catch me again, it's going to be tickets or...
It's the big house for you.
Yeah, one or the other. And they're actually trying to get me for something. You know, they've been watching me, following me around. One of them pulled me off the side the other day and asked me why I was over at the phone over at Long's. They're like, what are you calling, a drug dealer or something? You know, I was like, why are you guys stalking me? And I was like, actually, if you want the truth, I was over there spanging. You know? And it's just ridiculous. I mean, they're making us have to focus on something like this. You know, so we can't focus on other problems in the country. We've actually got to spend time to get rid of the sleeping ban, you know? I mean, something like this shouldn't even be illegal. It shouldn't even exist. You know? I mean, honestly, I'd like to find the man who actually made his time to make up the sleeping ban, give him a couple of my
seats. Mayor Bert Muley, 1978.
This ban's been going on since 1978. Oh, man, it's ridiculous. I don't know what else to say. I mean, I've got like tons of stuff in my head, but I can't get it all out.
It's all right. Take your time. You're doing good. You're
Sabrina.
And Sabrina, looks like you got a family unit here.
Yes, I do.
It's like a child and an associated male here.
Yes, I do.
You guys are homeless?
Yes.
And how is it living homeless? How are you making out?
Hard. Definitely hard.
Where do you sleep at night?
I crash by the beach.
Any hassles from police?
Yep.
Give me an example of last time that happened.
Last time it happened, they gave me a ticket and told me how to leave, and if I didn't leave, I'd go to jail.
And how long ago was that?
About a year ago.
So would you say in the last year things have gotten easier?
No.
So you're just hiding more deeply, or?
Well, I just got back into town, too.
Oh, I see.
So...
And you're, I'm sorry, you're saying?
Stayed at the church.
Stayed at the church. Be safe from everything. People love us there.
Which church? Interfaith Satellite Shelter? On the floor? Or?
Mission on the floor.
Uh-huh. And what about tonight? Where are you guys going to be sleeping?
Don't know. Probably by the beach.
This is son?
My son Elijah.
Elijah?
Yes.
Hey. This is his own name. I can see that. Your name is?
Tim.
Hey, Tim. Anything you want to say out there, any of the three of you, for free radio?
No.
Any hassles with police otherwise since you got back?
Not yet, but I'm sure it will happen real soon.
How long have you been back?
Just about
4 or 5 days.
4 or 5 days.
Let us know if anything happens.
Oh, we will.
Been traveling around city to city, basically.
Pretty much.
What do you find in different cities?
Same thing. Same hassling. Same cops always telling you to move, leave, don't do this, don't do that. You know, can't sleep here, can't sleep there. You know, it's ridiculous, pretty much. So.
It's the pits, man.
Yeah.
Gotten tickets and fines in other cities?
Yeah, actually tickets for dog tickets.
Where is your pooch? You wouldn't want a dog on the mall.
I don't have one anymore. He died a long time ago. So, yeah, it's been real hard with the cops out here. I think they need to, like, mellow out for a while. Leave us alone. Yeah.
My baby carriage is my home. Leave me alone.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Don't hold on my way.
Well, sometimes I am happy, sometimes sad. Thinking of the good times I have had. Thinking of the places I have been. Sometimes down, sometimes up, sometimes in. On my way to another working day. On my way. And I wish that I could stay on my way. But I have no time to play. And I hope that I will see you on my way. And I got me a job in Buffalo. And it's cold when those chilly lake winds blow. And it's hot when the steel furnace blows. It was dirty when the steel smoke rose. On my way. So forth.
And that was some interviews from the street. Again, revealing as ever that there is no legal place for most folks to sleep who are outside. That they do face, in many cases, harassment. In the studio with us is writer, co-producer of this show, and indefatigable video journalist Becky Johnson. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Robert.
And Becky, you've been, listening to some of these cuts, and you've been kind of observing the show as we struggle through it. Any reactions? Anything you want to add to what we've been listening to? Any thoughts?
Oh, well, let's see. I thought of some comments when you were talking about the chalking on the sidewalk situation, which gets more and more humorous and by the moment. But one thing was that if anybody remembers back at First Night, they had an event where it was kind of a chalk-in on the sidewalk, and the Downtown Association provided chalk for anybody who wanted to decorate the sidewalks. And some people said that that was their most enjoyable event on First Night. And it is all on videotape. We can use it during the upcoming trial if it ever gets to court.
Or possibly a civil trial. I know that, I mean, it seems to me, of course, obviously, what it is it's the police and the merchants decide they want to make a move on a particular group of people. They look for a statute they can use. They use it regardless of its legal questionableness, and then they attempt to justify it later, similar to the way they went after me for sitting on the statue, the base of the statue of the Scribner, the violin player down at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, and of course that
a
one
saw
was
player.
The musical saw. He's a musical saw player.
He came and an old wobbly who probably would be find it abhorrent all these sitting down laws that are applied against homeless people and hippies.
Well, it's interesting the lengths to which the city will go to cover up its blunders. For instance, I'm about to play a cut from the latest city council meeting 2 days ago. The afternoon session. Now, those who follow this show regularly may remember that on April 11th, in the afternoon, before the big protest in the evening with the pies and so forth, I was speaking to the city council around the issue. Actually, I think it was a month before, March 28th, not April 11th. In the afternoon, I was talking about one of my least favorite topics, but I guess most favorite to expose, the city council's kick out the Hispanics from the Dolphin Lee, raise them to the ground, and then set up a fancy new apartment building.
Oh, the infamous Dolphin Lee project.
The Mercy Charities housing hoax, as I call it. And
Mercy Charities housing giveaway.
Well, what happened was I was actually talking on affordable housing, and I brought up the issue of, because it was an agenda item in the afternoon on affordable housing. Keith Sugar didn't like the fact that I was relating it to homelessness and this plan to spend all the affordable housing money on Dolphin Lee, $12 million for the next 5 years. He cut off my mic. He told me to go sit down because it wasn't relevant to affordable housing. I mean, everybody I talked to afterward didn't know what was in Sugar's mind when he did and said this. So I went and I looked at the minutes of that city council meeting, and I read the minutes that said I was talking off topic. Not it was Mayor Sugar's opinion, but it was rather a statement that I was talking off topic. So I thought that this didn't seem quite fair to me, and I thought that it was, in fact, obvious I wasn't talking off topic. So I, for the first time, brought up a correction in the minutes to the city council meeting, and this is what happened.
Council members Robert Norris, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I do have a specific I'm concerned about, and I guess you may have a copy of my concern, which I guess Leslie, the city clerk, passed around. It concerns the affordable housing item on the minutes. There was a rather significant controversy that arose at that point, and it's described as follows in the minutes. Robert Norris Huff stated that housing was a key issue on many of today's agenda items and began speaking to other agenda items. Mayor Sugar requested that Mr. Norris address the agenda item, which is affordable housing strategies. In response to Mr. Norris's continued comments, which did not address the item on the agenda, Mayor Sugar turned off the microphone and requested that Mr. Norris leave the meeting. Mr. Norris did. This is the verbatim statement of the minutes. I believe the minutes are in error on several points. It certainly was Mayor Sugar's opinion, and he has entitled to it, that I was not addressing the item on the agenda. In fact, however, my reference to housing as an item that was coming up in later in the council in other contexts, I think was quite relevant to affordable housing strategies. In fact, I couldn't find anyone else in the audience that I spoke to who thought I was off topic. I was interrupted by Mayor Sugar after my first sentence in what seemed to be an almost pre-selected determination to cut me off. The Dolphin Lee project is the main affordable housing project which the city council is proposing. And that I referred to, the people who are homeless and outside, is relevant to affordable housing. To me, that's beyond question in my mind. And after the first sentence, Mayor Sugar interrupted my speech. After the second, he turned off my mic. Now, it seems to be more factual to say in the minutes that Mayor Sugar believed or determined I was speaking off topic. Every other person I talked to has said disagreed, but I can understand how the two of us, Mayor Sugar and I, can disagree on this issue. I respect his right to a contrary opinion, certainly. I believe, however, that it slanders me, and it technically sets me up for disrupting a public meeting charge to claim as a matter of uncontested fact that I was off topic. That's the first issue. But secondly, I did not leave the meeting, as it was stated at the end of these minutes. I concluded my speech, even though my mic was turned off. I gave the last five sentences of my speech. I went to the back of the chamber. I stayed in the room. And to suggest that I did otherwise, I believe, is contrary to the facts. Accordingly, I suggest the following correction, which you have a copy of. Robert Norris of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom stated that housing was a key issue and referred to several upcoming agenda items that he said also dealt with housing. Mayor Sugar suggested Mr. Norris was speaking off topic and turned off his mic. Mr. Sugar then asked Mr. Norris to leave the podium in the room, which Mr. Norris declined to do. Instead, Mr. Norris completed his statement, promising not to mention homelessness if the mayor found the topic irrelevant to housing, which in fact is what happened. I have a recording of this whole thing, which I'm sure the council can listen to. It lasts for about 30 seconds if you have any doubts about whether I'm accurate in this. And I also provided for the council a verbatim transcription of that recording, which I believe you may have. I think it's been presented to you. So I'm just asking the council to correct the record. I know we disagree, we heatedly disagree at different times, but to me it's important that these disagreements not stand in the way of an accurate statement of what happened, respecting the fact that both sides may have a different interpretation of what went on. Thank you.
That was my statement to City Council, and I felt a very reasonable and temperate one. I didn't even embarrass them, which, of course, I probably should have done, by playing the actual tape, which I have played over the radio, which essentially, and I don't think I have it with me, but what it does is it essentially documents the fact I began talking about the affordable housing item. I mentioned that later on in the agenda, an item will be coming up on Dolphin Lee, which also concerns housing, and we should be aware of it in this item. And another item will be coming up later in the evening on homelessness, and we should be aware of it in this item. And Sugar cut my mic, interrupted me, and told me to leave, with a threat of arrest. I declined to leave, and he and I continued to exchange comments. I finished my statement, and then I went to the back of the room and continued to observe the proceedings. This was described in the minutes completely falsely, first by claiming that I was speaking off topic without specifying what I was talking about, namely the biggest affordable housing project the city was has engaged in its history, the Dolphin Lee project, under the affordable housing topic, and that's what the topic was, and homelessness and housing for the homeless, which is, again, a question of affordable housing. Obviously, had the minutes reflected any of that, the mayor's attempt to claim I was off topic would have appeared completely preposterous. So none of that was mentioned in the minutes, and when I attempted to mention it, this is what the city council responded with.
Somebody else want to speak to this issue? Okay. Mike?
Make a 20-second comment, which is I'm going to move to approve the minutes in a moment.
And this, of course, is Michael Rotkin speaking, who now seems to be really the fundamental voice of the city council on these bad reactions to the sleeping ban and this horrible Dolphin Lee project. Rotkin's voice is the real underlying voice, unfortunately, as kind of tempered through Catherine Byers' control of the majority. And this is his attempt, well, his successful attempt, to his response to my attempt to correct the minutes, essentially is to say, fuck you. And this is what he says in the most, in his very smooth and mellifluous way.
I think the mayor, in fact, will make the judgments about what is, in fact, on the point. Robert's probably correct in the one level that everything's related to everything else in the world that we live in, but the mayor has to make difficult judgments about what's actually on the topic that's in front of the council. And I intend to support the mayor when he or she in this case, he makes those kinds of decisions. But I move that we adopt the minutes as they were reported to. Second.
Motion is second. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
And what happened here was Michael Rotkin said, well, anything in the world can be relevant to anything else in some sense. Therefore, that's what Robert says. Of course, that's not what I said. I said that homelessness and the need for affordable housing by the homeless and the most expensive project ever done in Santa Cruz on affordable housing is certainly relevant to the topic of affordable housing. Rotkin's absurd claim that that was not relevant and that we have to support the mayor because the mayor's judgment is determining in all things completely either surrenders all authority to the mayor, surrenders all independent judgment about what is true to the mayor, or what it really does is he's using the mayor and the mayor's own vanity here, because the mayor naturally doesn't like to be challenged on this issue, to present the truth in a way that Michael Rotkin wants it seen. That is to say, he wants to discredit my attempt to bring up an issue of affordable housing that he does not want to address. Rotkin stands in favor of ending
of pressing through the Dolphin Lee project regardless of the wishes of the tenants and of keeping the sleeping ban in place regardless of the misery and suffering that it's causing the homeless. So when those issues come up, he wants them quashed. He wants them pushed to the bottom. He wants them silenced. And when the mayor does that, as Sugar did in this case, he has Rotkin's approval, and it follows Rotkin's agenda. So Rotkin here says his arguments are the mayor has full authority to make these determinations, and Robert's only valid claim is that everything in the world is related to everything else. We're all aware of Michael Rotkin's proven track record of falsehoods, his record of rationalizations, his record of defending big developers and the police department, and the record that essentially, we had hoped, defeated his council member candidates in the last election. Unfortunately, we have the new council members essentially now part of the Rotkin majority. Becky, you have any comments on this?
Well, it seems like Keith Sugar is acting a lot like we saw Mike Rotkin reacting in 96 and 97, that Sugar is kind of taking his cues from Rotkin. And I don't know. Obviously, Rotkin is much more comfortable on the council, and at mayor, he just he handles everything quite adeptly, although he didn't come and get his pie, I noticed. But Sugar just really seems like he's struggling for control. And he had 22 police officers there for our simple little pie presentation on April 11th.
I note also, however, and this I think is the positive thing, is that there is a really thorough distaste that Mayor Sugar has for Mike Rotkin in many ways. And the one way to get Sugar off the dime on a lot of these issues, because I don't think, frankly, Mayor Sugar is too happy with the Dolphin Lee project, even though he speaks up for it, signs documents for it, is part of a 7-0 majority and does not speak against it. I think,
and seems to quote from studies that no one's ever seen or heard of.
Yeah, he quotes from, that was in the Voices from the Village, when he claimed that there had been some study showing that it was cheaper to destroy the Dolphin Lee than to fix it up. And again, when I talked to Seal Cirillo, she claimed the Redevelopment Agency had never done such a study and did not refer to it in any other context. So we're still looking for this missing study that Sugar found. I think
it proves he's right.
Well, I think a lot of Sugar's statements impulsively stem from a kind of a defensive quality. Either he's defending Catherine Byers. He did a lot of that during the task force to examine the camping ordinance a year ago when we were attacking Byers, who had apparently decided to have no real reform of the sleeping ban, even though Sugar and Crone wanted it.
Yeah, we were so mean, attacking that nice little old lady, Grandma Catherine Byers.
Right. I think his theory there was that Byers is the crucial fourth vote that will give Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar their majority, and they have to kind of tread warily, not to alienate her, so they can keep their majority until they can get new and better people elected in the November 2000 elections.
What is this alliance between Don Lane and Catherine Byers? I mean, she has Don Lane running around doing this and that. He's on the Homeless Services Center Board of Directors. He was the staff person for the Homeless Issues Task Force. He was the only one who financially benefited from that Homeless Issues Task Force thing. And didn't he work on Linda Steino's campaign back in 98 Steinow, you know, was definitely for the camping ban. Did anybody notice that?
Well, I know that Don Lane, again, was the 20, he was the $20 an hour, 40 hours a week, I'm not sure how many hours a week, 20 hours a week staffer on the Homeless Issues Task Force. I tried to get the Homeless Issues Task Force to dump him and put a formerly homeless person. They ended up giving Laura Tucker a kind of a little vanity job where she got half the time and a third the salary of Don Lane. And I know, indeed, Don Lane did endorse Linda Steinow on the losing slate of candidates. I call them the Kennedy-Rotkin slate that included Jane Walton, Rod Quartararo, and Linda Steinow. And indeed, Don Lane is on the board of directors of the Homeless Services Center. Again, Catherine Byers kind of has a key position there. It's one of her, you know, little projects. Unfortunately, she doesn't seem too concerned about violence against the homeless, finding safe zones. She's right now jetting around in Europe at a conference over there. I noticed that Rotkin defended her at the last council meeting.
Oh, yeah, he really got on your case for being critical of a council member because they take a vacation. He just thought that was just outrageous.
I think it's outrageous when a council member takes a vacation at a key time when the homeless interfaith satellite shelter program is closing down, the armory is closing down. The armory did close down, and there is now indications the armory will be opened up again.
She wouldn't do anything even if she was here.
If they found the funding. And I agree with you, Becky. I don't think she would do anything. But for her to leave so ostentatiously, to me, is a slap in the face of homeless people who have suffered her there's no place for the homeless type statements and behavior for a whole year and a half when she has a working majority on the city council and could have found legal places for homeless people to sleep. Maybe have saved some homeless people from the deaths by exposure and overdose, and certainly the violence against the homeless, I think, could have been certainly put in check by the fact that homeless people could have been sleeping in larger groups, well-lighted areas with some kind of nominal police protection.
Where's the public service announcement from the police department calling for a community alert that homeless people are getting beat up left and right, some of them extremely seriously? A man, Boston, he was one of the he's, when he was first booked into Stanford Medical Center, you know, he had to be airlifted over the hill. You know, they only do that in the most serious cases. He was listed as critically ill, and he remains hospitalized as we speak.
Hospitalized and impossible to contact because Sergeant Clark and his police department refused to tell either me or Ken Cole, the Homeless Services Center, or any other homeless activist, the name under which this man is currently being lodged in the Stanford Medical Center so we can talk to him, see how he's doing.
Or even any of his friends have been unable to contact him, and they're very concerned about him. Boston had a lot of people in this community that knew him, and you know, they're very concerned about his condition. The other man who was beaten along with and also airlifted to Stanford, Stephen Dawson, and he has been released.
Well, I know that you went to the board of directors of the Homeless Services Center a week ago, Becky, and of course Bayer Byers was busy doing whatever she's doing in Europe, no doubt. Michael Rotkin assures us important R&R behavior, or who knows, human ambassador to the foreign country or whatever she's doing over there, while the rest of the homeless people are dodging the police and vigilantes here because of her failure to support some kind of meaningful suspension of the sleeping and camping ordinances and or safe zones. But you did you bring up at that session, Becky, at that Homeless Services Center Board of Directors, the behavior of the police department in not allowing the very head of the Homeless Services Center to have access to the person at Stanford Medical Center, Boston, who apparently, again, is, I don't know whether he's in critical condition, but he certainly was in serious condition when he was airlifted there. And, of course, there was a third person airlifted as well, a man who was stabbed a week and a half ago in San Lorenzo Park. And I guess you wrote about that, right, Becky? Yeah, I think you wrote a story about that for Street Spirit recently, which should be coming out in the May issue.
Yeah, that's kind of a disturbing story, too. That man, his name is Brad Mills, and he was sleeping in San Lorenzo Park when someone stabbed him twice. He did not have any, did not see who attacked him because he was asleep at the time of the attack. And according to some witnesses that we heard from, They said that the police came and they grabbed Brad Mills and put him in handcuffs and were taking him off as though in custody. And he was saying, "Can't you see I've been stabbed?" So the reports we have on that are not good. So we don't know about any more about Brad Mills other than he was also airlifted over to Stanford Medical Center.
Also, there's a disturbing series of reports from two guys who are, should we say, over-the-top drinkers. We say that off, you know, immediately off the top of the deck because that's important. Caller, hang on, stay with us while we finish this point, and then we'll pick up the line. Lenny and Mario have been essentially, have had at least four incidents involving the police in the last week. Mario's a man in a wheelchair. I actually saw the tail end of one of these incidents where Mario and his wheelchair were being taken to jail. Mario was, I was actually at the jail. Becky was visiting a political prisoner and convict Steve Argue, who is serving a term for punching David LaFavor in defense of a woman. And folks who are not familiar with that case should get in touch with Huff, 423-4833, for more information. And I saw Mario being taken out of the squad car. I approached the entrance of the jail, and I asked what was going on. Mario shouted, "I'm being arrested." And I said, "What for?" He said, he asked the police officers, "What am I being arrested for?" And officers Kieford and Seeley refused to say aloud what he was being arrested for. They repeatedly requested what he repeatedly requested, "What am I being arrested for?" I heard it stated four or five times. And, you know, they said nothing. They just wheeled him in to the police station. Now, I complained to Sergeant Andy Crane about this. This was 2 days ago. And Sergeant Andy Crane called back and said, "Well, they told him earlier what he was arrested for." Well, I told Sergeant Crane, you know, if he is, in fact, being, you know, if he is requesting that information again, and why aren't these people saying so? Because police officers frequently will not tell the public what someone's being arrested for with the excuse that there is a privacy right here. Well, there certainly was no privacy right. And as you may have heard on the last show, when a woman with purple hair, a minor, was being arrested downtown and dragged to a store, or dragged to a squad car, and she kept screaming, "What am I being arrested for?" And they wouldn't say, their claim still was privacy, privacy, privacy. Of course, what they're talking about is privacy from the public, not the protection of the privacy of the victim, the privacy of the police officer and his right to change charges around. That's what we're talking about, in my view. And that's a serious question. But right now, I think we're going to have to turn to our phone line because we are getting a phone call from the Dynamic Duo. We're going to go to them right now.
Hello, is this the Dynamic Duo?
That's us.
And who are you? Will you sign in, please?
I'm Nana.
And I'm Julie.
And Nana and Julie, aren't you mother and daughter?
Yeah, we are.
And I'm going to take you both out on a double date soon, so watch out. So you guys are, I recognize you. You are Julie Costanza Gomez?
Yes, I am.
And Nana, you are, give me your full name.
Maria Elena Ruiz.
Maria Elena Ruiz. Mm-hmm. And you both are, well, Nana, you are a tenant in the Dolph and the Leak apartment complex?
Yes, I live in the complex.
And
my children live here also with their father.
How many children are there?
Three.
You have three. How long have you lived in the Lee apartments?
I've been here about almost 2 years now.
Uh-huh.
But my children have been here longer.
Now, it would also be fair for those to know that the both of you are related to Vernon Lee. He's your father, Julie, and he's your grandfather, Nana. Is that correct?
Yeah,
that's correct.
And Mr. Vernon Lee is, in fact, the owner of the Lee apartments.
He is.
Now, the Lee Apartments is, of course, targeted by the City Council for a wonderful new beautification project, which involves tearing it down completely, bulldozing the land, and then relocating all the tenants there and in the nearby Dolphin, bulldozing the Dolphin, bulldozing the so-called Rex Court Pink Palace across the street, blocking off the street and starting a new project called the Mercy Charities Housing Project, which will give all your tenants wonderful new rooms and wonderful new quarters, spacious accommodations. What's wrong with that?
Well, first, it's everything that they're promising. They came and they were talking to everybody about this program, and they made all these promises to us, and it sounds good, but they don't understand that there are... One thing is the plan that they have is going to put 10, 12 families out because there's more families and apartments than they're going to build.
And do we have any specific stats? And who's speaking, Julie or Nana?
That's me, Nana.
Hi, Nana. Do you have any stats on, we're talking about how many apartments currently exist in the Dolphin and Lee?
Mom, do you know exactly?
Oh, between the two, I think there's about 58.
And I guess if you added in the Pink Palace, which is another 15 there?
There's that many units, but they've already evacuated that land, and so there's not families there, but from what I've heard so far, the plan for that is like to put some recreation center there or something. It's not for housing.
I see, but the building, in theory, is still there. Right?
It is still there.
Right. So, but if you look at the total number of people that have been displaced, including those who are already displaced, there's a lesser number are going to be able to come back into the project?
Yeah, that's true.
That's one of the kinks in the deal.
one would say that you're, that this project I've described as creating a lot of internal refugees who don't speak English, who are at the poorest of the poor in our local community, and yet, of course, many of whom who are hardworking people.
Yes,
very much so.
Yeah.
At our apartment, this is Julie.
Mm-hmm.
At our apartment, I would say 90% of the people there are working people. Or at least one person in their apartment is working. And there's lots of children. We have mostly families. I think we have three apartments that are just males who are all working, and they are helping support their own children in Mexico, and you know, putting together a little life here while they're, you know, while they can be here. And so they have affordable rent down there.
Mm-hmm.
And
how much is the average rent in your apartments there, Julie?
It ranges from $550 a month.
Now, you manage these apartments,
yes,
right?
Yes. It ranges from $550 a month to $750 a month.
And has it recently been raised?
It's been raised once in the last 5 years, and it happened last year.
Mm-hmm. Doubled, or?
Oh, no, like $25 or $50.
I see. Because I know Tim Fitzmaurice at one time suggested it was raised a huge amount and then kind of backed down and said, oh, it was less than he'd thought.
No. I believe the raise was $50 a month, and I don't know if it was on all the apartments. I just started managing after the first of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I did years ago, and I came back this year, especially because of this project and because I have the time and ambition to make sure our residents are well-treated.
Mm-hmm. Now, did the City Council and the Redevelopment Agency come to you and to your tenants and say, gee, folks, we're thinking of you know, tearing down all your apartments, relocating you to different areas, and then returning you to a new project? Do you want to do this? Did they come and ask permission of your tenants? Did they come and sound out what your tenants...
They basically said, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
And we need information from you so you can get relocated. And
did they come
so
to your...
We could help you relocate yourself.
I see.
The tenants are still going to be the ones that have to look in the paper and go get accepted from a new landlord.
Now, let me understand. How many people are going to be affected by this in your apartment complex and, as far as you know, in the Dolphin complex?
I believe we have probably 60 to 75 people at ours. And I think the other apartment, they have 32 units. Mm-hmm. So I know they have over 100 people.
So we're talking at least 200 people.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about a couple hundred people.
And I always say 200 to 400. Is that an exaggeration? Because I understand that I've always counted each apartment as having at least four, and then sometimes you have people come and staying with them.
Yes,
that's true.
Up to eight.
I think 250 would be right around there. And you know, once if we let them do this, don't you think they're going to continue down the block? It's going to affect the whole flat sooner or later.
Well, I know one thing that really struck me, Julie, was that at the Redevelopment Agency meeting on Tuesday, at which a lot of us talked about Dolphin Lee on the oral communications public comment section, after that, there was an item which talked about refurbishing certain other apartments on Lee Brandt Street. That is to say, not demolishing them, but kind of fixing them up. And we wanted to know, well, why did you choose to fix up these apartments, say, rather than offer the Lee apartments a fix-up or offer the Dolphin or the Rex Court a fix-up? What was the reason? Was a study done? Is there some, you know, basis in which you made this decision? Because clearly a study was done on this apartment that they decided to refurbish. We saw the study. It was connected to the report where they voted the money for this. But they admitted, and Seal Cirillo of the Redevelopment Agency wrote me a letter 2 days ago that admitted that no such study has ever been done, at least by her department, of the Dolphin or of the Lee or of the Rex Court. So
they have not, to my knowledge. And they would need permission to come on the property, or at least a legal reason why they want to come on and do a study. Although we would be very, very open to having them come if they were going to consider refurbishing instead of knocking down.
But, I mean, I guess I'm puzzled. Why would they decide to knock down your apartments, before even doing a study to see if it could be refurbished. I mean, when I've talked to Jane and Phil Baer, local activists who fought the Beach South of Laurel plan, the 3rd Street realignment 2 years ago, Canfield's attempt to extend his empire and to destroy still more housing in the beach area, they suggested that Canfield wants this property that you have, that the city will begin this project, and if it bogs down, Canfield will leap in, buy it, and convert it to commercial use.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty suspicious. Our apartment building is, our property line meets with a Canfield property line. And he has a big parking lot on the corner. That's where the Pizza King used to be several years ago. For all the oldies but goodies from Santa Cruz will know what spot it is. We're right behind it, and then the Dolphin is right next to our apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And in the big business world, it would make perfect sense to get those places knocked down and have a project fall through. And then, God, what are we going to do with all this property? Let's sell it to Canfield.
Well,
he's a better customer as far as taxes go than we are. I know that.
Why would you say that?
Because he brings in a lot more money for this city, and he probably pays a lot more money for his property than we do. So he's probably a better customer than we are.
So you think his money, his he would create more revenue for the city if he took over the property?
Exactly, he would. And are we talking about revenue for the city or homes for low-income families?
Right.
That's what, you know, it's like, which one are we doing
well,
here?
Of course, they're talking about homes for low-income families, but the question is, what's really motivating this strange process? Because another question that's continued to come up in my mind, and I've brought it up to Council Member and Vice Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, who's really the big booster of this project, why did you and your city council decide to destroy existing housing rather than, let's say, to build on vacant property adjacent, the parking lot nearby, by Canfield's parking lot, build on it, and then when you had those buildings built, move the people into it, and then maybe
mm-hmm.
refurbish your apartments and the Dolphin apartments,
right.
And then move people back in or out, or maybe essentially increase the housing stock,
yeah.
rather than destroy it and spend $5 million relocating people into housing that you now tell me that these people who don't speak much English, who don't have a lot of local business acumen, who don't have necessarily a lot of good credit or even, you know, necessarily good documented papers, they're going to have to look for their own apartments?
And go through a credit check again to even see if you can come back.
And they're going to have to do
because
this. Right, but they're going to have to look through their own apartments to find a place to live while they're waiting for this project to be built.
Right.
Then they're going to have to reapply to get back in.
To get back in. And, as of right now, most of our tenants do not qualify for Mercy's prerequisitions to get in their housing.
Now, wait a minute. You say most of the tenants in the Lee don't qualify. I know that some don't, but have you actually taken a survey and you are convinced that there's a majority that will not qualify, will not be able to come back, even though Mayor Keith Sugar and Elizabeth Vogel of Mercy Charities guarantee that they will get first preference, quote-unquote?
Right. First preference means that it's open probably to the whole state of California for the housing, or at least the county. And first preference really is no guarantee whatsoever. But even if you are a first preference person because you left our apartments, doesn't mean you meet the qualifications to get back in.
Now, I'm told those qualifications include such things as not having an unlawful detainer on your record that is not related to some medical condition, that,
right.
that you can't have engaged in any kind of drug felony or violent felony
right.
in the last 5 years. There is some question and debate about whether you're going to be able to get back in if you are documented or undocumented. We can talk about that. That issue is for controversy, whether it's HUD funding or home funding or CDBG funding that's building this, and does that, you know, bar tenants? I don't know. I'm still trying to find out for sure.
The last person I talked to, his name is Nancy Flores, and she's a project manager from HUD.
Mm-hmm.
I got her number through the San Francisco HUD.
Right.
And she's the one who is, we are her territory, so she's the project manager for this area, and according to her and her computer, the city has requested funding, but HUD has not made a decision on how much or where they're going to give them the funding from. So depending on which program of funding, that's what the qualifications for HUD funding will be. Mm-hmm. Even if you get the HUD funding, it doesn't mean you qualify for Mercy's. Mercy's like this great big apartment manager of the world who has their own rules, and so they have their own strict rules, in fact, and so some of our people, what they're doing is having these meetings with the people, and like I always have explained it this way, they're selling them a car. They're selling them a car that they don't qualify for. So they get these people to hear how great it's going to be, and you're going to have 4 bedrooms, and each one of your kids is going to have balloons all over the house, and it's going to be so beautiful, and you're going to change your whole quality of life, and it's only going to cost you a third of your income. And so, the people want to sign. Yeah, hey, I want that. You know, I want that. And then they get into the finance department, and they don't qualify. Any of us can be sold a car on a car lot.
They want to sign, and I know that you have gone to an attorney, Reed Chance, or I should say your father, the owner of the property, has, and made a specific proposal to the city council and the redevelopment agency, which are one and the same, suggesting that the city council agree that if they want to proceed with this project, that they guarantee to the tenants in writing, first, that every single one of them will get full relocation money for the full time of construction, no matter how much that is, to get into housing during the interim period,
right,
regardless of their documentation, regardless of their felony record,
right,
regardless of their credit status, regardless of whether they're disabled or not. That's the first thing. That also the attorney's letter requested that each of them be guaranteed a position in the new housing without further application bureaucratic nonsense, that they be able to get back in, period. And the city council, hasn't responded to your request?
No. One thing is that all the tenants, because we do have a weekly meeting here, and we all the tenants get together, and it's open for anybody to come to. And we were talking about how we keep asking for that. We've asked them numerous times at numerous meetings that we want a contract saying, before we even leave, that we can come back. We're guaranteed a spot in the new apartment complex. And they will not answer us.
We've gotten no response. And I myself have hand-walked it into them on 3 different occasions.
Mm-hmm.
One time with my attorney present. And we get no response. And what I think, you know, the bottom line is, if their motives are honorable and they really want to make this housing for low-income families and they want to help these people, the ones who are being affected, help them, then they wouldn't have any problem signing a contract with those guarantees for each and every person that they will all be replaced into that new housing project. They will all be eligible for all benefits, relocation benefits and benefits as far as subsidized rent when they get back, and that if something happens with this project, that they'll sell it back to my parents and let them rehouse these people.
Rather than have what happened to much other affordable housing in the beach area, the Canfield destroy the housing and essentially wait for the city to rezone it commercial, right?
It's just very odd that he would buy that apartment building and run everyone out and let it run down to the ground.
And you were talking, of course, about the Pink Palace or Rex
Pink
Court,
Palace,
right across the street from you, which is a part of this Dolphin Lee project, so-called.
Yeah.
The Mercy Charities Housing Hoax, as I call it. Well, Nena, you're also on the line.
Yes.
And, Nena, you've actually sat down and talked with Tim Fitzmaurice?
Yes, I have.
And you and Veronica Lopez, who kind of is now the city's Spanish translator, FLAC manager, and frankly, I regard her as a sellout on this issue, and I don't mind telling that to her face. I don't think, I know I'd like to be proved wrong, but that's my estimation at the moment. She originally was part of the Beach Area Working Group, which fought an earlier attempt to bulldoze the beach flats and send a bunch of Hispanic people into homelessness. Now it seems she's cheerleading this whole thing and facilitating it.
Yeah.
But you've agreed to meet with, you've actually met with these people I know on April 6th they had a meeting of their so-called, what I call, bogus powerless relocation committee, which is stacked with people that the council has appointed who essentially favor this project.
Yes.
And you had a tenants meeting beforehand. You came up with a series of concerns. You want to tell us what you decided at the tenants meeting and then what happened when you walked into the larger relocation meeting?
Okay, our meeting, basically, when Veronica, we had talked to her prior about when she was coming, and she kind of sounded like she's just going to translate. That's all she's going to do. So when her and Tim Fitzmaurice came to the garage to our meeting, all the tenants were there, and we were asking questions regarding the credit check and why do we have to fill out applications to come back. Where can we see in black and white that they don't care about immigration status? And he wouldn't answer us to any questions we had. He just kept saying that I'm sure that we're going to be able to work everything out. That's all he would say. When we asked him about our concern about the community being torn apart, he wouldn't even answer that question. He kind of started talking to me again about the credit check, and he just said, I can pretty much say that what we're going to be looking at on the credit won't affect people. And
then why are they doing one?
And then I told that's true. And so then the people also were confronting him on all the issues they have, and he really couldn't give them answers. Instead, what Veronica did kind of to get him out of all the questions was starting to talking about what a committee is. And she was saying that anybody can volunteer to be on it, and then the tenants started asking, well, we are going to get together this week, and we're going to actually see which people from our complex can represent us, because that's what the committee person is supposed to do. It's supposed to go to the meeting, represent the tenants here and what they feel, excuse me, take their questions, take their concerns to the meeting and help bring it up for them, and then whatever is given at the meeting of information that needs to come back to the tenants, they're supposed to do that also.
Well, I would watch out, though, Nana. This is a powerless committee, as far as I can see. They can recommend a way, and the city council can proceed to do whatever it wants.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's as distinguished from a project area committee, which I understand activist Phil Baer has now sued the city to demand that the city set up a project area committee, and perhaps he'll call in on this if he's listening. I'm not sure if he is, but he frequently mm-hmm. listens to this show. He requested that a project area committee be set up in accord with relocation law, which in any large-scale relocation of low-income people requires that there be a committee set up that has some real power and that actually is elected by the people of the area and not just appointed by individuals on the city council who are already interested in pressing a project regardless of the interests or desires of the people in that area. So that may be, be important. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't do this, and I'm glad that you're organizing the tenants. And I think that you came up with a document, did you not, about what the tenants want?
Yes, I did.
Do you have that document?
Yes, I do.
Can you read it?
Yes, I can. The first, basically what it is every apartment, I'm going to go around and ask them these questions and have them fill out these forms regarding what they really feel about this relocation program, about what's going to happen. And then I'm going to submit it. And the first question I have is, what are your concerns about the Beachflats relocation program? The second question I have is, do you believe the plans the city has will end up working out the way that they are telling us?
Let me interrupt you for a moment, Nana. Mm-hmm. I know that 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I'm interested in these questions, and I certainly want to know the answers to them, but didn't a meeting of the Lee tenants result in a series of 4 or 5 goals and principles and just conclusions that you had reached about what you wanted to do that you then attempted to present to the relocation committee, but then they shut you up?
Yes, they did.
Do you have that document?
Yes, I do.
Can you read that document? That's really the one I want to hear.
Okay. Those are the demands. These are the demands that we gave them. And what we did was we got together and we went into the meeting organized with one person who was going to stand up and speak for everybody. So that way, it wasn't everybody raising their hand. We basically got together ahead of time and did all of that. So that when we went into the city meeting, it would have been more organized. One person standing up kind of with a little list, and it's for everybody. And this is what it said, and they wouldn't listen to us. They set us down. We're telling us to be quiet, that they had other people there that
that we could ask
more,
one question.
There were more important
no
questions.
Comments.
Yeah. And so... This is what the notice says. A formal notice to the City of Santa Cruz and Mercy Charities. The residents of 124 and 126 LeBrant Street do not agree with forced relocation from our homes by the City of Santa Cruz. This has been our home and our community for many years. As residents who are low income, we see Mercy Charities and their subcontractors are not serving our best interests. We would like the city to cease paying them any money at all and remove them immediately from any projects involving relocation, renovation, reconstruction, or rebuilding of homes for us. We feel that the needs we have as low-income workers here in Santa Cruz could be best filled with the construction and operation of a child care center that is free so that we can direct our incomes to ensuring the best type of living situation that we can afford, free of government constraints on family visitors, legal status, legal history, and other controlling rules and regulations. The Mercy Charities program told us that they would build a community center and child care center with the condition of us paying for the use of the facility. We want use of the facilities without any cost at all because the taxpayers' money was allocated for the benefit of our lives, not Mercy Charities or any other agency or contractor. If we were to agree to move, we feel our best interests would be served by the city taking domain over the property at 131 and 133 LeBrant, also known as the Pink Palace, and constructing new homes there first. That way we can move into temporarily so our community won't be separated. Then as the replacement apartments are completed, we would be moved back regardless of any type of screening or discriminatory guidelines. This would extend the time of the project to allow the construction over a period of years, but then would result in sufficient housing for all families currently living in each of the apartments due to overcrowding and economic needs. Prior to the time of temporary relocation, we demand that each resident be given a legally binding contract from the City of Santa Cruz, guaranteeing that we will be able to move back into the apartments that will replace our current residents. We will not tolerate further attempts to isolate and divide us by rumors and lies about the conditions in our homes, the nature of our lifestyle, and our quality of life. Respectfully submitted to the City Relocation Committee by every tenant in our complex signed it.
And how many tenants is that?
We have 16 units.
And was this submitted under threat of eviction by Vernon Lee or by Julie, by you?
No. No. This was, we get together on our Monday, it depends what day of the week we set up the meeting. Usually now it's been Friday nights. Mm-hmm. But we get together and we bring up our concerns or we bring up issues, and we got together with all the tenants and we basically, among ourselves, put this together. And we submitted it, and we actually picked who was going to get up and talk in the meeting and everything.
As I recall, it was a woman named Alma who had been on Voices from the Village and actually kind of raised these issues, some of these issues, with Tim Fitzmaurice and Elizabeth Vogel, right?
Yes.
15-year-old woman who's, some would say a girl, others would say is an old lady. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, we had her, and they wouldn't listen to her. And so
now who cut off Alma when she attempted to present this list to the meeting?
I think her name was Amy.
Amy Bailey of Mercy Charities House?
Yeah. Amy and Elizabeth. They really didn't want this list read out loud.
Were you able to distribute this list to the other tenants there?
Yes.
Oh, that's good. So they've seen it. Were you able to give a copy of it to the city so the city has, in fact, officially received it?
I handed one to Fitzmaurice myself. I happened to see him on my way out. I'm Julie. And I saw him as I was leaving with all the tenants. And he accused me of intimidating my tenants to... He said I wrote that list, number one. And he also said that I'm intimidating them to do what I want them to do, or maybe I guess he thinks I'll evict them or something.
Now,
like
I want to
that.
Say that I was present when part of this list was written. I said absolutely nothing in the course of this working. And what I heard was a lot of people talking in Spanish to two people who were helping to translate
right.
from a local union. I know that I guess you and Nena were, two of you were there, that you contributed to it, but you certainly didn't write it. This was written by at least a dozen people in the room who were throwing out ideas and talking back and forth. and this was, I guess, in late March or early April that this list was written.
Yeah.
And I guess now what you're saying is that every single tenant has made a specific proposal, which I find to be remarkably clear-sighted, which says, don't spend millions of dollars having us scrounge around in a horrible housing market for our own housing, but put us into housing that you build on the site of this destroyed, you know, this pink palace, which is pretty miserable condition, which everybody's already been dispersed to the winds by the Seaside Company, thank you very much, and have people go into that complex and then refurbish the Lee and come back there. I mean, it sounds to me, it doesn't even require buying from Canfield parking lots, which I guess has been a proposal that I've suggested. Why I'm wondering why they don't buy vacant property and build on parking lots.
There's a lot at the end of Beach Street near the river mouth,
uh-huh.
And it's all grass. It's not even a parking lot. It's a soccer field right now. The kids are using it. That would be a perfect size and everything. They could do a lot there. And they said to us they don't want to have to fight Canfield or anything. But I think our people are worth fighting for.
Well, I mean, that may be true too, but I mean even if they don't buy new vacant lots, your proposal doesn't even involve new vacant lots.
No.
It involves using property of Canfield's that they've already agreed to purchase from him or eminent domain, the Pink Palace, which is a part of this, you know, Mercy Charities housing project, which, by the way, has incurred a lot of criticism by folks concerned about the fact that it's both the researcher, the developer, and the manager of property without any competition. They're being paid $60,000 essentially to award themselves contracts,
right.
And there's no competition, and indeed they run a number of projects now, including Sycamore Grove, I'm not sure, do they run El Centro?
Right. Another thing I've done some research on, although it's not a total study on this, but at this point, as far as Neri Lagoon went, they use one union-type workers. They are anti-union.
Mercy Charities?
Yes. And,
so there's some concerns. I know there's been concerns about whether the property can be used by an anti-choice group called Catholic Healthcare West, and that's, I don't know if that's true or not. I know the city council is refusing to even look at those questions and answer them in a straightforward way. That was something we brought up at the city council meeting on Tuesday. But I mean, I guess what I'm trying to understand, and I'm going to get back to you, Nana. The tenants are, as I understand it, saying, one, we don't want to move, and two, if we do have to move, we're only going to do it if, we can move into property that's already built, that we don't have to seek our own housing, and if that doesn't work, we want a legal contract before we budge an inch from our apartments.
Yes, that's true.
Right.
But the question I'm having is, are people who, I mean, what Fitzmaurice and his allies at city council say are, oh, sure, you know, this is a bunch of landlord hokum. These landlords are pressuring their tenants. And hey, you don't even see any of these people coming to city council. These tenants aren't complaining. It's just the landlords. What do you say to that?
Well, number one, I have nothing to do with the management here, and I have to pay rent like everybody else.
And this is Nana speaking.
Yes, this is me, Nana.
Uh-huh.
And
but you're the granddaughter of Vernon Lee.
Yeah.
And you're also the daughter of the manager, you, Julie.
Yes, right. And I have to pay rent to live here. My children live in the complex also with their father, and he pays rent for their apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so we don't really, you know, there's no discounts or anything for family members. We're not getting nothing out of it. And basically, the people who live here, and they said it to Tim when he was here, they told him straight to his face, the reason why they want me on the committee, the reason why I am the one who's helping them the most is because, number one, I am bilingual. I speak English and Spanish well, so I could talk to the city. And I have been, every concern they come to me, anything that they have a question, I go to the city with it. I do speak for the people. When they ask me to give a message or say something, I do it for them.
Now, as a tenant activist, and I've done this in the past, I would naturally have a suspicion of people who are relatives of landlords or managers of landlords, and I believe you because of the personal contact I've had with you. But I mean, as an advocate, I want to also suggest this is a possibility and see if you two would agree. Would you two agree to have a secret ballot of every single member of the Lee, where the individual Lee members could vote for a variety of proposals? They could vote for Tim Fitzmaurice's proposal. They could vote for a proposal that the city build on vacant property. They could vote for the proposal that there be, the Pink Palace and the upgrade. And that, would you agree that this be a secret ballot and it be observed by people from Mercy Charities Housing, by city council members, by members of the community?
Yes.
And would you abide by the results of that election?
Oh, yes, definitely. Because there's nothing, anything that when I go to a meeting and stuff, I really do hear what the people are telling me. And, I mean, since right now I'm not working, basically I'm taking care of somebody who is ill. And basically right now what I'm doing is dedicating myself to helping the people who are tenants here. And I know what they really, really want. And what their honest fears are, and I'm concerned and I'm scared for them, because I don't know if I'm going to be one of those 10 to 12 families that are going to be put out, but also I don't know if it's going to be my children or other people in my complex, because we're not guaranteed a spot to come back. We're not even guaranteed that any of us can come back. And these people, they're so scared. They don't believe anything that the city's saying. And I think that the people here are doing a wonderful job at coming together every week, speaking what they feel. I mean, they got together to get their committee formed, and they're saying to the city, these are the people who have the time right now, who can participate in the relocation committee and who want to do it. And if you don't accept them, then we're not for this program. We don't want to hear about it.
Well, again, I caution you about the relocation committee. I think it's essentially a powerless group that
yes.
is eventually controlled by city council, regardless of how many people you get on it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm running into time problems. I want to point out to the audience that I guess, Nena, you may be able to come on the show and actually be here as
yes.
as a guest,
uh-huh.
and you can translate into Spanish so we can actually be a bilingual show, and you can have
yes.
your own tenants calling in. You know, we can invite people like Sandy Silver, who supports the Dolphin Lee demolition, as I call it, and Tim Fitzmaurice. He's always invited to call in, but never has on this issue. Thank you, Tim, to give a call. Is there more you want to say before we're going to try to quickly get in a call to Mike Schmidt on another issue of the sleeping ban?
Okay, I have one last thing I
sure.
want to say, and I'm Julie.
Yes.
Over Easter vacation, I had my three grandchildren over here, and we were in the car. And I had some paperwork, some stuff from the flat, one of those lists or whatever in my car. And my grandson, who is 8 years old, said, are they really going to knock down our house? And I said, well, we're working on them not doing that. And he said, yeah, my dad told me that they're going to knock it down because we painted it blue. And I said, well, we're working on that. But just the idea that he knows about it, second of all, his dad was gracious enough to not tell him why they want to do it, and this little boy is thinking they're going to do it because it got painted blue.
Julie, how can people help who want to get in touch with you? And do you have any meetings planned you want to invite the public to?
Nena, yes, Friday night, tomorrow night at 7 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
we have a meeting here at 124 LeBrant. People are invited to come participate, and we speak about the issues of what's going on. You can speak how you feel about the program and really get it heard amongst all the tenants, and we do work on getting lists put together to submit. It's a really good meeting because we really work together to try and get our issues heard. And we do it together.
And is there a number people can call if they want to talk to you?
Yes. My number is 466-9520. They can call me, and if they want information about coming or just information on what's been going on. And also, if they can't make it, I am recording the meetings, and I do have paperwork that is given out at the meetings. And if they want to get a hold of any of that stuff, they can call me, and I can get that to them.
466-9520.
Yes.
I want to thank you, Julie Costanza Gomez, and thank you to Nena Ruiz for being on Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I hope you can call back again on Sunday, and I hope you can come in next Thursday and
yes.
actually be a guest in the studio.
Yes, I will be there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Robert.
And this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides at 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz. final 10 minutes, we're going to attempt to get in touch with Michael Schmidt, Area Chamber of Commerce CEO, who at the Tuesday City Council meeting came out with, for the first time, a pretty straightforward statement suggesting the sleeping ban had to be repealed in areas that were distant from businesses and residences. And we're going to actually put him on the air right now.
Michael Schmidt.
Mr. Robert Norris.
You are on the air.
How can we help you, big guy?
Well, I know that it's first of all, I want to thank you for letting us reach you at home. I know that you have very little free time, and we're cutting into more of it. I know that at the city council meeting, you sent an email that actually jolted Mayor Sugar into saying that he saw a possible change in the wind in the attitude of certain crucial segments of the community around the sleeping ban. Do you want to tell us what that email said?
Well, basically, the email pointed out that I felt that I was becoming more and more convinced that this is a human rights issue, that we knew that there were places from the census count that was just completed for the homeless, places where people were already staying, that were away from business corridors and residential neighborhoods, and that if anything, they should create a moratorium for those places that would allow homeless people that are already staying in those places to be able to stay there in a safe and legal manner until they can resolve the issue of a more permanent solution, and at the same time, finish the work they're apparently doing in securing the armory.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, when the armory is secured, if it's, we've heard from, actually, I've only heard this from you. Keith Sugar has not confirmed this, so I'm not quite clear, you know, if, what's actually going on. But you told me several days ago that you had heard from Mayor Sugar that, in fact, Governor Davis has agreed to allow the armory parking lot and the armory itself for year-round use.
Well, what Keith told me in a telephone conversation was that he didn't say about the governor, but he did say that they had been able to secure the year-round use of the armory, that they were able to partition it off so that they could create some privacy areas for families and others, that they were able to park vehicles up there and would be able to provide food service, and that he was securing the arrangements to make that happen. Now, today I had a conversation with Tim Fitzmaurice, who said he didn't know anything about it, and I asked, because he was said that he was getting emails regarding the email that I sent to the council, and was concerned about the whole issue, and I told him what I had been told by Keith, and he'd indicated that Keith had not shared any of that with him, so he was kind of, seemed to be surprised by it. So,
and that, unfortunately, is all we have of the April 27, 2000 flashback. But now comes the April 30th flashback, which kind of follows up on some of the same topics. The campaign to pressure the city council to end the sleeping ban, to fight to have free speech rights on the sidewalk by standing up to police repression, to such things as chalking of political slogans on the sidewalk in erasable chalk, which is being used to jail and drag people into court. And you're going to hear more of that. And anyway, some of these same intentionally ignoring real homeless circumstances continues to happen 23 years later. And it's, even though much more is being thrown, much more money is being thrown at the homeless folks, and there is some extension of shelter around a kind of a minority of the homeless population. But in the meantime, the majority is being harassed, is being criminalized, and is being sent around endless, essentially given the message, get out of here, that's the only way you're going to get any peace. Or sit around patiently and wait for the programs, which serve really only a really significantly small minority. Certainly a larger number than before, but hardly proportionate to the amount of money being spent. Anyway, here is April 30th for 23 years ago, 2000.
Howard Networks to Hart, and we are asking the city council every 2 hours all night long why are homeless people being routed by your laws.
Of course, Howard Zinn's words were.
Well, would you like me to paraphrase or quote it?
Either way.
Why don't you quote it for us, Robert?
Let's see. You know, I'm going to have to paraphrase it.
Okay, go ahead, paraphrase it.
There's something along the lines, in 1996, he was asked about this at a meeting up at, on campus. What do you think of the sleeping ban? And he said that he felt, I think we should interrupt the sleep of people who pass such laws. And so I guess, David, you are recommending sort of a midnight wake-up call for certain city councils?
Yeah, the you know, we did the staying awake, we did the sleeping without blankets, and now we have to do an actual bit of, like, phone work at night.
And do you have any phone numbers that you think people...
Well, they're in the phone book, and, you know, Mr. Rockin especially has said that he would take a phone call at any time, any hour, on any issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's already a given.
And Catherine Byers is also in the phone
book. Also in the phone.
And her phone book number is 426-6108 for those who don't have a phone.
But the thing is that we would like people in the role participating in Rolling Fast. Now, you guys may be doing something a little different with your sitting-in kind of protest. But the Rolling Fast to me is not only to call up. Those who are not willing to call up at night, but what... They can also participate in the Rolling Fast by doing sit-in at the daytime, one person at a time sitting inside the city mayor, city manager's waiting room, waiting to talk to either the city manager or the mayor. Every 2 hours, we have a different person there. Okay, we need people to sign up for that. Sign up and call the Green Party number, 425-4499.
425-4499. Or you can call House 425.
Yeah, to give us those names, though, Robert.
Say again.
And be sure to give us the names of people because we want to sign them up on the certain shifts.
Sure.
And yeah, we should coordinate our efforts.
We'll be coordinating. And I think I've given you the list so far of the names.
I've emailed it to you too. And right now, Roxanne has the most up-to-date list, so I'll try to get that from her.
So, yeah.
This is an all-citizens alert. I mean, you know.
We're going to need people next
time
week.
Time is now.
We're going to need people next week to do this city manager. City Council waiting. I call it waiting for sugar since he is the mayor.
We're going to need people to bring coffee and donuts for the people to come there in the morning.
Right, and we're going to be hoping to have, actually, for the first few mornings, starting with Tuesday morning, we will be having hot soup and hot food for anybody who's hungry or wants it. And we're going to, you don't have to be willing to sit inside these boring offices for hours and hours while they ignore you and look at you as though you're a piece of trash, which is...
If there's union members that are wondering out there, you know, why they haven't gotten a raise from the city that, you know, is a decent raise, or they're wondering why they can be so easily fired for personality reasons of their supervisors, and if there's city employees that are wondering why their jobs are precarious or wondering why they're not really getting ahead, no, it's because there's a criminalization of the homeless that makes for the homeless to be more permanently homeless. And when you have that situation, your living wage situation cannot go up. So the living wage situation, the job condition situation is kept at a low standard by having these laws that make sure that homeless people stay homeless more permanently by this kind of law.
And it's really it's depressing, and it puts people in a position where they cling to slave wage jobs because they're afraid of ending up on the streets and then having to, you know, to face not just homelessness, but criminalization because they're homeless.
And, you know, when we talk about the homeless, we talk about the people that are out there on the street mostly. But, you know, we've got to remember that in this county, especially as having worked in welfare departments in other counties, this county especially, we have a high percentage of couch surfers, a high percentage of people that are truly homeless according to federal standards. You know, federal benefit standards, if you don't have a place of your own, and you're sleeping on somebody's couch one night and maybe three weeks out of the month here and then 2 weeks out of the month there, or just, you know, just have to pay for the groceries by being allowed to sleep on a couch unless somebody's girlfriend comes in one night and then you can't, you're homeless by federal standards. That number brings the homeless population in Santa Cruz more up to 7,000, Robert. And we forget what kind of situation it is. So we have all the things, all the dynamics are going on with housing, and all the dynamics are going on with the moving in of populations into this county. Those people are very, very precarious condition. So if we have these kind of laws in the book, it's going to backfire real bad, and we need to get rid of them as soon as possible.
Wow. Well, look, David, we've been talking to David Silva, a guy who seems to still have his shit together in spite of starving himself for 4 months.
So when are you going
to... It's unbelievable that they let this festival go along. We try to keep it silent, you know, just let the city council know. And, you know, we told them in the middle of December that we're going to be doing this. And it's a progressive festival. It's a time to reflect their consciences. And what I get from them is that they're not allowed to vote. That's a serious situation, folks. Time to wake up. So I think it's a wake-up call for May.
And I think you are far too generous with these guys. I think they're making choices not to vote, but maybe there is some evil genius behind all this. And I think that, again, it's got to be the community that serves as a countervailing force, as you say.
Well, if there's any good police out there that know of something that's going on wrong with, you know, with the police department, so is there some assistant deputy chief of police or something that needs to come forward and blow the whistle? Now's a good time.
Yeah, Rampart, it happened in Los Angeles. Time for it to happen in Santa Cruz. We need the, you know, essentially the cover lifted off this...
The police in Santa Cruz have been acting for a long time now as the political agents. They've been acting in political manners. They've not acting as social service. They've been acting as political parties, going into communities and telling lies about the existence, about things that's been repealed. And then trying to get street signs put up by using that tactic, that's political activity. You know, going into homeowners associations and working with them to get cops grants, and then them scratching each other's backs when it comes to political fights of pet ordinances that they want to keep in place, that's political activity. There's something seriously wrong. The wake-up call, Santa Cruz.
Well, I remember Officer Howes moving into... threatened Bob LaMonica for a table at the farmer's market when he tried to get the rent control measure there rolling.
Yeah, it's selective enforcement when it comes to how we're allowed to practice democracy, free speech, petitioning, registration of voters, selective enforcement. And, you know, that's political police behavior. That's not allowed. This is America.
And I know that
claim America.
The independent investigation has gone nowhere of the May 22nd events, where, you know, the police essentially attacked a bunch of peaceful protesters. And I guess one man is now in jail, Steve Argue, for defending a woman in that situation.
But, you know, you use the word attack like they were like, you know, some kind of wild beast bullies. But you really got to look at it. They were really much more scientific and fascistic about it. You know, to actually go and single out single mothers that are carrying children and start attacking them, knowing that they would be worried about Child Protective Service and so forth, means that they were acting to try to quell demonstrations. They were acting in a political way.
Well said.
I understand that, Robert.
Well said. And aptly pointed out. And, of course, the attempt of the bureaucracy, the liberal bureaucracy, or the progressive bureaucracy, to investigate this through the first ever independent investigation of the Citizens Police Review Board was, of course, completely shut down by Attorney John Barrasoni, and I'd have to say then-Mayor Kathryn Byers.
I'm still putting my bet on Arnie Left to come through.
Are you? Well, your money is...
I'm forever hopeful.
I think you're going to lose that money there. Left is still... I mean, when I'd even heard from a member of the CPRB that they planned that they were going to leak the report if there was no activity, you know, if the public was not allowed to see the results of the $10,000 report. But I want to point out to you that no police officer was subpoenaed in the course of this report. No police officer's testimony was taken in the course of this report. It's interesting. The police department's IA, Internal Affairs, has gone and interviewed the police. And on the other side, Diane Christensen has interviewed the protesters. And so you're going to get something that is persuasive to nobody. It's essentially, you know, what's been happening is protesters have been punished with long jail terms, endless court machinations, and then, of course, just the threat of this stuff hanging over the head of people like Jim Clasen, who still faces some judicial consequence for, quote, resisting arrest, and a whole series of arrests.
You can't be surprised by that, Robert, when you have a chief of police that allows the kind of police officers, you know, there may be a handful, there may be more than a handful, but the kind of police officers that he's heard reports from the Citizens Review Board. He's heard it from Internal Affairs. He's heard it from the citizens. He's heard it at city council meetings. He's heard the ways police officers have treated people, have talked to people on the street. have discriminated. He's heard the way police officers have been behaving. And for him not to have done anything about it, what do you expect, Robert, that there's something wrong with the police department?
Definitely a lot wrong with the police department. Of course, even more, I think, that we have to focus, just as you are doing, David, on the police department and not worry about these...
Their pet ordinance. Speaking of that, is their pet ordinance. The Chamber of Commerce doesn't own it anymore. The Downtown Association doesn't own it anymore. The Neighborhood Association don't own it anymore. It's a pet ordinance of the police department. We have to remember that.
I think that the your critique of the police department is quite appropriate. That's where the focus has to be, not on these toy fangless groups like the Citizens Police Review Board, which is...
Arnie's trying to reform the Citizens Police Review Board.
I have no confidence in Arnie Leff. I've seen him engage in the kind of abusive behavior that Sugar is doing in his meetings in city council.
Well, Robert, you have a tendency to make people a little irritated.
I don't think it has to do with me personally. It has to do with Arnie Leff wants to hold private meetings.
I don't know what's going on. I've been to the Citizens Police Review Board a long time.
Let me educate you on that issue, David, that Arnie Leff...
I'm just looking at the...
Yeah, let me educate you on the...
printed material, and the printed material looks like
Arnie Leff
in a direction.
Let me finish this, David. Let me just point this out to you in the audience, which is that Arnie Leff, who heads the Citizens Police Review Board, and Mayor Sugar have for the last 3 months stonewalled on meetings to reform the Citizens Police Review Board. And one can only point to the fact that some of us demanded open Brown Act meetings as required by the Public Participation Brown Act. As a consequence, Sugar and Left have scheduled no meetings, zero meetings for any kind of reform of their body. I think his record is
good. Consequence, I got a call coming in, and I can't believe it.
Listen, I want to thank you, David, for your interview. And
420-5017, that's area code 831, call City Hall, put decriminalization sleep on the agenda.
Exactly. Well said. Thank you, David.
And that was David Silva of the campaign to end the sleeping ban. Very informative tussle with him there. And he'll be one of the people that will be waiting for Mayor Sugar. And hopefully you can be, too. You want to join this movement to put the city council on the hot seat by putting your butt on one of the chairs in the city council mayor's, city manager's waiting area at City Hall. Well, give a call to 423-4833. Volunteer. We'll give you a time slot, or just come by and volunteer your time. We'll be starting tomorrow. I should say, yeah, it is tomorrow. Monday at noon, and you're invited to join us down there. And then every day in the morning, we're hoping to have some hot food. And if you got any, if you want to volunteer, hey, bring that by too, around 8 o'clock in the morning at City Hall. This again is Free Radio 96.3 FM. I'm Robert North. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor. 2.5 hours of civil rights talk, music, discussion, dialogue, and ranting. And usually phone calls, but today there are no phone calls because I'm out of town, and this is a tape. You want to leave a message for me, 423-HUFF, 423-4833 is the number to call. I'll be happy to reply. If you want to raise an issue on the next show, hey, we'll do it. Next show is 6 to 8 on Thursday on this station in the evening.
Virginia door, on the street, on the queen. Santa Claus. Santa Claus, all the speeches that bring the loud applause. There's not enough to give, no, there's just not enough to share. So drown the sounds of sorrow with a hearty Christmas cheer. Come and all have Christmas in Kentucky. There's no holly on a West Virginia door. Don't twinkle and you're hungry, and jingle bells don't jingle and you're poor. Have a merry, merry Christmas and a happy New Year, babe. For now's a time of plenty, plenty's here to stay. But if you knew what Christmas was, I think that you would find Christ is spending Christmas in the cold Kentucky mine. There's no holly on a West Virginia door.